On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Mike Schofield of the Atlanta Braves organization. Mike, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to do this with you, and thank you for putting all this together, taking the time out to interview us, especially during the season when you've got to work later in the day. I think it's really cool. So just a little bit about me. First year in my current role with the Braves. I spent the previous 8 seasons with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Worked every level but Double A. Spent a couple years in Triple A, and then the last 2 I actually spent in AZL. Started in 2010, and been enjoying it ever since.
So you've seen just about everything and everywhere. So what adjustments have you had to make, not only in a new role this year as a coordinator with the Braves, but being in a different organization as well? It's kind of a double dose of new things to deal with.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of the nice things, and I'm fortunate in a sense that I've previously worked with a couple of the guys that were already here. With the Braves. So 2 of our guys on the major league staff, and then also our minor league medical coordinator, I actually worked with in AAA for quite a few years. So I was fortunate to kind of know where they stand and what they're about. So our philosophies kind of align well. It's been a good fit for me, and I just kind of view myself as another piece to kind of help push the program forward, just come in, understand the way things had been done in the past, and then just trying to add on to it and continue to make it better. So challenges, really just getting to know new players, the staff, the schedule, especially in spring training, being at Disney. We have to work around the Disney schedule a lot, so just the way the fields rotate and everything works, it definitely kind of felt like I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But that's been probably the biggest challenge. As far as adjustments, I think the hardest part, being a first-year coordinator, especially when you're coming into a new organization, is just getting to know your staff and letting your staff get to know you, and especially when you only have 1 month to really do it. I had to hire quite a few guys as well, so it was kind of like, okay, how do I teach these guys that hadn't previously worked in professional baseball, one, what the job looks like, what it entails, what the expectations are, and then also kind of get to know where they're at, and also share where I'm at without being, authoritative or my way or the highway kind of thing, because I want, my staff to know that their input is valuable. So that was probably the biggest challenge, is the time crunch of having to do all that. And obviously something that we've been working on throughout the season is kind of continuing to build those relationships.
Yeah, I got you. That is a whole bunch of stuff going on for a first-year coordinator. Plus, you've been West Coast for a long time, like we talked about, and now you have to deal with living in Florida as well. And seeing kind of the East Coast of baseball. So a lot of things going on for you, but it sounds like you're doing all right, and you're enjoying the job.
Yeah, I love the job. It's been great. It was certainly a whirlwind. My wife and I had a baby right before we moved. So it was kind of all these life events all at once, but all good problems to have, and I'm really enjoying it.
For sure. Congrats on that also. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on is I've been trying to find somebody to have a discussion with me on this about PRI. And everybody said to look to the Diamondbacks. And I had found you on Instagram, and I saw that you were posting some stuff. And I was like, all right, this is my guy. I'm going to reach out to him. And
yeah.
So I kind of want to dive into that, maybe just in general, what PRI is, how you've implemented it in baseball, and maybe why you chose to dive in either as an individual or as an organization previously with the Diamondbacks. I've done a little bit of looking into it, but this is kind of your platform. Whatever you got for us, feel free to share it.
So just kind of, well, my background on it, you know, I started with the Diamondbacks and I was fortunate to, you know, be in an organization that really pushes continuing education and kind of pushes the envelope as far as, you know, kind of looking outside what we would consider the general, maybe scope of practice for strength and conditioning. And so how I kind of got into it was in the off season, our major league staff suggested that I go work at a physical therapy clinic in the off season to just kind of glean whatever I could, be a sponge and just, you know, soak it up. And the clinic was down in Gilbert, Arizona. And the guy that ran the clinic was a PRC credentialed physical therapist and, you know, used a lot of it for his evaluations and his treatments as well. So that's kind of where I got my first exposure to it. And I had really, it was just, okay, if I'm going to help this guy and help these patients, I need to know what I'm talking about and understand. So I didn't take any formal course. I just bought the text or the handbook or the binder. And I just read it over and over again until it started to stick. And then I really just enjoyed it and the challenging nature of it and studying anatomy. I'm kind of drawn to it. So that's kind of what ignited the fire to keep taking courses and learning. And then almost, well, a year and a half ago, I went through the PRT certification process, which is their credential for strength conditioning coaches and athletic trainers, just as a personal goal. It was something that I wanted to do. But by no means am I an expert. I think this that old adage that, you know, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know fits, you know, 100% to PRI. It's so in depth, and there's just so many things involved that you can't know it all, and there's always something to learn. So I'll do my best to try and kind of summarize what it is for me. But for, you know, for those that are interested in learning more, I would definitely, you know, suggest checking out their website. There's also a lot of good blogs out there of, you know, people smarter than I that are able to kind of summarize different courses and stuff. So there's a lot of good resources out there. But for me, PRI is kind of like a system or a way to evaluate, explain postural adaptations and asymmetrical patterns, and also understand joint position of our athletes. So one of the big things that they talk a lot about in PRI is asymmetry is normal and actually a good thing. The body is naturally asymmetrical. So the heart is on the left, liver on the right. Your internal organ structure is asymmetrical, and this alters, you know, which side of the diaphragm is larger or has more of a dome shape. And so that can alter rib position and so on. It kind of expands out from there to the limbs. So the issue isn't really about, you know, one side or the other. It's when we get stuck, so to speak, on one side, which is usually the right. So the goal in PRI is to restore alternating or reciprocal function as best we can. So one of the lines I liked from Andre Ospina of you know, functional range conditioning was that the only bad posture is the one we spend too much time in. And I think that also applies well to, you know, PRI or whatever three-letter acronym, you know, philosophy we're kind of talking about is, I think, you know, extension is not a bad thing. And often what we're working on in PRI is getting guys out of extension, but it's not, you know, it's not bad. It's just something that we need to make sure we have access to triplanar movement or movement in all planes as best we can on both sides. So kind of along those lines, like in baseball, that's kind of what we see a lot. If we take it back to, the plumb line postural analysis or upper and lower cross syndromes, a lot of times guys are, shoulders might be rolled forward, lack of mobility or rotation in the thoracic spine, anterior pelvic tilt, and so on. So for me, postural restoration techniques and exercises are a great way to help kind of get athletes out of that position.
I got you. So, in terms of baseball, how would you implement that? Maybe either at the affiliate you were at, or in, let's say in spring training, do guys come in like prior to a lift and go through a series of drills? Is it a whole separate part of the day prior to all baseball activity? What kind of worked best for you?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really enjoy using the PRI in is that it's so versatile in its use. So for me, really, it can fit anywhere. So if it's a warm up, if we're going into a lift, we could use some of the exercises to help better position our athletes prior to getting in the squat rack or something like that. Also, in between sets is kind of an active rest. Or as an exercise itself, I think PRI, the Institute, has done a great job of adding affiliate courses, one of which is the fitness and movement course, where it kind of takes the concepts and how can we apply this immediately in the weight room with exercises that are, I mean, they're challenging. It's not just a repositioning or a corrective exercise, so to speak. It's a, it's going to get your heart rate going. It's going to challenge you for sure. But perhaps the biggest and most beneficial thing or way that I've used it is for recovery. Like recovery is king in this game. We play as many games as we do. We're all looking for ways to help our athletes show up the next day ready to go, feeling as best they can. So if we can help them get more parasympathetic sooner and kind of stimulate that recovery process by putting them in an advantageous position, by activating certain polyarticular chains of muscles and inhibiting others, maybe we can kind of get that going a little bit sooner and, help them recover and also hopefully avoid injury.
Yeah, so I had no idea they really had all these courses and everything. This is not meant to be offensive or anything, but when people are like, oh, PRI, they're just breathing with balloons. And I was like, it's got to be more than that. Like, I understand that's a big part and like the breathing aspect is important, but I didn't know there were so many courses and different ways to go about it. And I've seen you on Instagram doing some stuff and I'm like, he's practicing what he preaches and this looks like hard, like actually legitimately challenging.
Yeah, and I think it's to the credit of the institution, because I think, anytime there's something new, there's going to be a little bit of resistance to things. And I think, things that look weird or a little bit different or maybe challenging. And I think what happened was, especially with PRI, is that it was born out of a clinical setting. So, the clientele or the patients that they were working with were, maybe chronic pain, post-surgical geriatric type things where they don't have the ability to get up off the table and move around in, say a weight room or a gym. So a lot of these exercises I feel like were, how do we target certain things that they're actually capable of doing? And then they had such success with that that strength and conditioning professionals and athletic trainers were starting to show up because the science behind it or the reasoning, made sense, or they were having some success with it. And I think, the powers that be within that institution said, hey, there's this whole other, field that we could help with. And so they've added these affiliate courses where now it's like, okay, how do we apply what we know to more of a healthy population or one that isn't necessarily injured? And especially, like I mentioned, with the fitness and movement course is just a great starting point for strength and conditioning coaches because they kind of take a step back from all the complicated acronyms and the way they go about describing things and kind of bring it down to the core. Okay, this is what you might see, and here's how we can attack it in a weight room setting. And I think it's kind of opened up you know, kind of the guards have come down. I think strength conditioning professionals are becoming a little bit more open to it. And by no means is it, you know, the only thing we do. It's like anything. It's another tool in a toolbox. You know, first and foremost, you know, the strength and conditioning foundation, you know, principles that we all kind of adhere to come first. But, you know, if we can sprinkle in little things here and there to be that much more effective, you know, for me, it's, I'm all about what works. So if you have something that, that works for you, I want to know about it. And for me with PRIs, like I said, I found it really interesting. And so I just kind of kept digging on it. And, I think the nice part too, is that it can fit really well with, other, you know, philosophies or systems, if you will, like, functional range conditioning and stuff like that. So it's just, it's another piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's why I have you here. Selfishly, I just wanted to hear more about it so that I can have some direction where I start doing my own studying of it. So do you have, like, I know you mentioned there's blogs and stuff. Do you have anybody specifically that you follow, or is it you go always to the direct website for information?
Yeah, directly to their website, there's a lot of great articles and stuff by some really smart people that, you know, this is what they, you know, this is what they built their career on. The people that present at the courses, as well as other certified therapists and strength coaches and athletic trainers. So a lot of great information on there, but also just, you know, the one blog that I go to a lot, a guy named Zach Couples, you know, I think he does a nice job of summarizing. The guys at iFast incorporate it really well, especially in the strength and conditioning setting. So, I mean, really, you just kind of Google stuff. Like, you know, it's going to pop up. And sometimes that's just all I do, is I just to find new things and, like, yeah, okay, let's see what people are saying about it and what their take is. And I think it's can be really beneficial.
So I was having some low back issues, and I literally just Googled, like, PRI low back, and I found one exercise that I've been doing, and it has changed things for me completely. Like, my back has not been bothering me, and I know if it feels a little off, if I just do this, it'll reset for myself. So I'm going to put you on the spot, and don't feel obligated, but is there one exercise that you would recommend above all else that is, like, the biggest bang for the buck for a baseball player?
Bang for buck PRI exercise for me would be the all four belly lift. So basically, the position is, you know, you're on the floor, quadruped. And basically the goal of this is to kind of help reposition the rib cage and put the diaphragm in a good position. The reason I like it, especially for baseball players, is because when doing the exercise correctly, is we're also getting we're working towards getting the anterior pelvic tilt. We're kind of tucking the pelvis back into the counter rotation. Kind of repositioning the diaphragm, also working on thoracic flexion. It's another breathing drill, but it's easily done anywhere, hotel room, ballpark, on the field, to help kind of reset and get everything going. So that would be kind of it's one of my staples that I use a lot.
Yeah. From what the limited stuff I've seen, it seems like that's one of the big things, is you can do it just about anywhere. So if you set up a player with a couple things to do, they can just do it in their hotel room if they're motivated to do so. And most of the guys, at least where I am, AA and up, are motivated enough that if you give them something and you say it's going to help them, they'll do it.
But yeah, I think that, you know, kind of like you just said, but like, one of the benefits to it is that there's not a lot of equipment needed, and it can be done anywhere. You know, if a player is willing to put in the work, they can do it at the hotel when they wake up, before they go to bed, you know, whenever their back is feeling a little bit tight, in the bullpen. I don't know. You know, it's wherever they want to do it, and I think you know, that to me is huge for a lot of guys. So that's great that you've had some success. I think that's really how a lot of us kind of start playing around with new things, is just from personal experience. For me, I had some knee pain especially with like frontal plane movements, like a lateral lunge or something, like it would just kind of get a sharp pain. And I started playing around with it when I first was at that clinic years ago. And without even knowing what I was doing, I was just kind of playing around with some of the exercises. And, for whatever reason, I think it certainly helped, but yeah.
That's what we do. We just try things that we think will help us, and if they do, we pass them along to our athletes, and if not, we discard them and move on to something else.
Yeah, right.
So you mentioned that PRI is a little out of the box and it wasn't always well accepted, and so I'm intrigued on your response to this one. What do you believe in with strength within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing? Is it PRI or is it something way different?
I mean, that would definitely be one of them. I think it's kind of interesting too, because working with the Diamondbacks, we were kind of known for that. So guys would come up and they're kind of wanting to ask about it, but they're also not really open to hearing about it. So it's kind of like there's the interest was there, but it was still kind of like, I don't know if that's what strength and conditioning professionals should be doing. And for me, like, just good training is good training, and it's all encompassing. So it's something that can help, and I want to use it. So that's certainly something that's kind of been, I guess, could be viewed as crazy. And then I'm also a licensed massage therapist, which this year I haven't been able to do as much just because of the new responsibilities and getting familiar with that. But it's a big part of kind of my skill set and something that I enjoy doing. It was really, I went based off of recommendation from my coordinator at the time, Brett McCabe, who's now the head strength coach with the Padres. And he was finishing up school and just recommended that I go do it. And kind of just blind faith, I said, hey, if this is what I need to do to, get a job next year and be a good strength coach, then I'll go do it. And so I did. And like I said, the priority is the weight room, but if I can help through soft tissue work, help a guy, maybe feel and exercise better, where I can, get him on the table or on the floor, out on the field, do a couple techniques, kind of free him up, so to speak, and then go right back into an exercise. Okay, well, maybe now I've made it that much more effective. Or, during the season, just help guys, talk about recovery, and also helping out the athletic trainer with any kind of rehab. It just kind of opens up another door where, I can just be more of an asset to my players and help out. So, I think those two things are probably the most, they raise the most eyebrows for sure.
If continuing your education and just looking for different ways to help players is crazy, then we should probably all be crazy.
Right. And I think that's part of, the field is that it's ever evolving, right? So if we're not digging on stuff, if we're not seeking ways to improve, then we're probably going to get left by the wayside. That's kind of the route that I went. Like I said, it just kind of based on suggestions by guys that were, I looked up to, and I valued their opinion. I just kind of followed it, and I'm glad that I did, because it set me up for, the ability to eventually get to this position, which has been a lot of fun.
So, like you said, you're a first-year coordinator. You had some hires this year. So, what is it that would make your coaches successful in your mind, maybe in general, and then specifically in baseball? What makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
It's funny, when you sent me the kind of the notes of what we wanted to talk about, it was interesting, because on my flight out here, I started reading a book called Great at Work. And one of the things that he was talking about was passion. So obviously we want guys that have a passion for what they're doing, but passion isn't enough. If we go and we follow our dreams, and he was giving examples in more of the business world, but if you just solely follow passion, you could end up broken. It's not always the best advice. But if you can match passion with purpose, that's where the money is. And so, but what he meant by, with purpose is creating value and a personal meaning behind the passion or with the passion. So, like, an example for me would be, we're passionate about the field of strength and conditioning. We love what we do, but we also see the value of what we're bringing to the players to help them better their lives. So, we're contributing to someone else. So I think if we can match those two, and if we can be able to kind of make that connection, your sense of purpose and the energy that you bring to your work on a daily basis, because as in baseball can be tough sometimes every day. I think that is easily felt by the players when you kind of exude that, and definitely make you very successful as a coach. As far as in baseball specifically, for me, kind of like we talked about, is when I'm looking to hire people, I want guys that are hungry to learn and are open to new ideas. I think always digging on personal development or new things within the strength and conditioning realm. I want guys not necessarily to be robots of what I enjoy, but to just, what's your passionate? What gets you fired up within the field, and then pursue that, as far as you can. If you're into one system like a PRI or functional range conditioning or FMS, whatever it is, like, instead of popcorning all around trying to learn it all, take one system as far as you can and really be good at that. So if I have one guy on my staff that's great at sprint mechanics, or one guy that's really good at FMS or PRI, whatever it is, like, I want to have those go-to guys, because that's going to help bring up the level of our staff for sure. And then I think probably one of the biggest things for me too is being able to honestly and realistically self-evaluate. I think it's easy sometimes for us to talk about what our strengths are as coaches, but it's often harder to reflect on what our weaknesses are. And I think the more that we do that, the better we become at kind of sharing that vulnerability with other coaches on our staff, so we can help each other. And it just kind of creates a, a culture where everyone's working together and pursuing different things to help, just be better coaches. So that's kind of what I would suggest or what I would think could really help with the success of a coach.
Yeah. And I mean, you say specifically baseball, but that probably applies everywhere. If you're a good self-evaluator, that's going to help you, whether it's strength and conditioning or literally any field in the world. If you can evaluate yourself and look at your weaknesses, and instead of shying away from them, just work on getting them better, you're going to be in a better spot. So very good stuff. So kind of along those lines, what advice do you have for others in the field? You're a first year coordinator. Maybe some guys are looking up to you and saying, man, I want a job like that. What advice do you have for others in the field?
Well, just, off of my personal experience or my journey or whatever, I worked 8 years in the minor leagues, which is a pretty long time. And there were certainly, times, especially the last 2 years, where I started, kind of contemplating like, hey, maybe this isn't going to happen for me, or maybe it's time to consider other things. And I never wanted to. From day one, I wanted to be a major league strength and conditioning coach, but the road hasn't always been easy. And I think being able to, have that long-term goal, but also realistically anticipate the struggles or the tough times that may come along the way will kind of help you either stay focused or, direct you in another way. So for me, that was just, okay, how do I keep challenging myself? How do I keep improving? And for me, one thing that I did was every season, I just picked kind of a large goal that I wanted to do just for myself. And I think, mostly that was for continuing education purposes, just pick a course or pick something to do just to kind of always be, stimulating the thought process and staying on top of my game as best I could. So that would be my biggest advice is, kind of what we talked about. If you have that passion, and if baseball specifically is really what you want to do, go at it full force. But be prepared that it's not always going to be easy. You might have to repeat a level, you might have to move down a level. You might, there's always going to be things that are going to get in the way, especially as you get older, if you get married or you have kids, like There's always going to be outside influences that are going to make things tough, but if you have, that foundation in place, then, it'll get you where you need to go or want to go.
Yeah, I think just about anybody that's listening can relate to that. It's like you have to be prepared for the struggles. And there are days where you are like, I am definitely not doing this next year. I might not even make it through this week. And then there are days where you're like, man, this is awesome. And usually those awesome days outweigh the bad ones. But if you anticipate those bad ones, it makes it a little easier where you're like, okay, we're going to get up. We're going to do this again tomorrow. It's okay. It'll be all right. So very good advice. Very good advice. And I think everybody can relate to that for sure.
Yeah, I think, it's kind of embrace the suck sometimes. And that's, I think having little notes or, words or phrases that have a deep personal meaning for you that can kind of snap you out of it and kind of bring you back to, okay, I'm a ball game, sitting in a dugout with a group of great guys. We're in the weight room, we're having a good time. Like, it could be a lot worse. And I think, just being able to kind of snap yourself out of it, bring it back to the enjoyment of the profession is really helpful in those times.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, our bus got in at 6 this morning. We're recording at 10, and there's nowhere else I would rather be right now. Big picture, like, this is awesome, So you just got to embrace it and you got to understand it is what it is. And big picture, if you have that goal, it's all worth it in the end. So very good advice. So another thing is you keep talking, continuing ed, continuing ed, continuing ed. It's obvious that you're very into it. Where are you going for continuing ed? Are you reading books? Obviously, you're attending some seminars and maybe some podcasts that you listen to. Any recommendations that you have? I'm all ears.
I think for me, since we talked about PRI, if guys are interested in that, my recommendation would be to check out the fitness and movement course first. Like I said, I think they've done a nice job of kind of breaking it down, and then also giving you things that you can immediately go back and start, playing with and applying in the weight room. And then if that sparks the interest, go back to the foundational courses and check that out and kind of deepen the understanding of it. I've also really gotten into the functional range conditioning. I think it's another way for strength and conditioning coaches to kind of blend the kind of the athletic training and strength and conditioning into just one performance team. I think a lot of times there's been, maybe in the past separation. This is athletic training, this is strength and conditioning, but those types of courses, okay, if it's mobility work or repositioning, if we can help out, now they can come into the weight room and do some of their rehab type stuff and then go immediately into their lift or the workout, whatever it is, and kind of blending those two. I think it just helps us be more valuable during the season. So that's kind of where I look for things, is like, how can I apply this? Again, without knowing exactly what it is, having not taken the course, but things that I can immediately apply. Other courses, I'll just stick with those two for now. Books, I'll give you two. I'm sure some of it probably been mentioned before from a coaching standpoint. Conscious Coaching, I think, is a great book. What I really liked about it is the way they kind of broke down different players into kind of themes that you might see, and kind of, and then personal experiences from other coaches and how they dealt with that type of player. I think, especially in baseball, when we're with guys literally every single day, you really get to know these people, and you can kind of see the differences in personalities and how to reach them, because, as like, it's different. You can't treat them all the same. Some guys require a little bit more finesse. Some guys, or they respond well to a kick in the butt. Some guys don't. So I really enjoyed that one. And then kind of more of a self-development leadership type book, I just finished Culture Code. And I think it did a really nice job of, like, how can we, improve the culture of our departments or of our team even. and gives you some nice ways to, instead of just, theoretically, this is, this is good and these are the examples, but it gives you some concrete steps that you could take to start working on that. So, podcasts, I just like things that I'll listen to, podcasts that cover a wide range of topics. So the ones that I go to most is The Body of Knowledge, and Jay Ferrugia. I may have butchered his name, but they bring in a lot of different topics, a lot of different people from a wide range of career fields, nutrition to weightlifting, music even. So those are two that I really enjoy, just because it kind of gets me out of the kind of doing the same old thing all the time.
Yeah, I'm always looking for new ones, so I'll have to check that out for sure. That's the beauty of podcasts. I mean, I've said it before on the show, but you can listen to anything you want by anyone you want, and it does not have to be strength and conditioning. And sometimes it's good to just get away and get something different and refreshing. So
I'll for
check
sure.
those out for sure. So I know you're on the road and you might be a little bit busy later, but if you have time, I'd like to do a lightning round. You got time?
Yeah, no, we're good.
All right, cool. Let's do it. So first question, biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning, who is it?
Who is my personal influence? I'd probably say Brett McCabe, my first coordinator.
Okay. One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Barbell.
Good answer. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Personally, just I don't know if I can count it as an accomplishment, but becoming a dad has been fantastic. Professionally, just being able to reach this level as a coordinator where I can start focusing on helping others, especially my staff, get to where they want to go. It's really rewarding.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I'd be a drummer in a punk band.
Hell yeah. Do you play or do you just wish you play? Oh, okay. That makes even more sense then.
Probably not as well anymore, just because it's hard to play drums when you live in an apartment with a baby, but I do have an electric set that I try and bang on every now and then.
Awesome. That's so cool. I'm kind of jealous of you. I've always wanted to play drums, and I just have no musical talent whatsoever. And more importantly, probably no desire to actually start trying to play.
Neither did I. In college, I just decided I wanted to do it, and I just bought a drum set and forced myself to learn because I invested in it. So I just kept it.
You spent the money, so you might as well do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you coming on. There's a lot of good stuff in this one. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more from you? I mentioned social media. Can I add your Instagram in, or is there a better place?
Yeah, no, Instagram's cool. I haven't been as active on it recently, like I said, just with all the things going on. So maybe I need to get back on that and start posting some stuff again. My Instagram will be fine.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Mike. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was awesome to have somebody come on the podcast and talk PRI, and I hope you enjoyed his thoughts on the topic. Three things that I took from Mike: anticipate the struggles, match passion with purpose, and be a good self-evaluator. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.